Hello and welcome back to Equity Tutors. So last lesson we spoke about inheritance and the genetics of individuals, but today we are going to move on to talking about genetics within the population. So inheritance at the population level and how the gene pools and allele frequencies are affected. So let's just get straight in and let's first talk about some definitions. So the first thing we're going to talk about today is species. So we've all heard of species, but we might not actually be sure exactly what a species is. So a species can be defined as a group of similar organisms that can reproduce to produce fertile offspring. Now, the fact that they produce fertile offspring is very important because there are some organisms that can mate with each other, but the offspring that they produce are not fertile. So for example, a mule. So if a donkey and a horse have a baby together, they can do that. But the offspring that they have, that mule, won't be able to then reproduce again. So this is why the donkey and the horse are not actually part of the same species. So organisms which are the same species all have the same number of chromosomes within their cells. So in humans, we know that's 46. In a horse, that is 64. And in a donkey, that is 62. And then if we look at something like a sheep, that has 54. So different animals have different numbers of chromosomes. And remember that chromosomes always come in pairs. You don't need to remember the number of chromosomes within these other species. Just make sure you always know that humans have 46. So two organisms that are from two different species can't produce fertile offspring because they have different numbers of chromosomes. So as we said, a horse has 64 and a donkey has 62. So the haploid cells, so the gametes from a horse and from a donkey, would have 32 and 31 respectively. So then the zygote that's produced, so the offspring that's produced, so the mule, will have 63 chromosomes. Now, because that is an odd number of chromosomes, they cannot undergo meiosis and they can't produce gametes. So that means that offspring will not be able to reproduce. So this is how we define a species. So they must be similar, they must be able to reproduce to give fertile offspring. So always remember that last part of the definition. Okay, so the way that we can organize organisms into different species is very tricky, and there are several factors that need to be taken into consideration, and sometimes things change. So when we get more information, things may become different species, or actually we may realize that they're the same species. Species definitions are quite fluid as time goes on, as science gets better and we can get more information. So some of the factors that need to be taken into consideration when we define a species is the observable features. So that's things like the morphology, so how they look. So, you know, a giraffe and a pig look very different. So, you know, we can assume they're not the same species, whereas a warthog and a pig look much more similar, right? Then we would like to look at their DNA and their RNA to see if they're similar, and also their proteins. So they may have similar proteins, or maybe they look the same, but actually when we look at their proteins, they're very different. So that would mean they're different species. And then finally, the key part, which is in the definition I already gave to you, is the ability to mate and produce fertile offspring. So this is a really key point. Members of the same species tend to not live alone. So they normally live in populations. Some species will exist in only one population, so they might only exist in one place. But some animals within a species may exist within multiple populations over the world. So for example, the squirrel can be found in multiple different countries. It can be found in North America, it can be found in Europe. So that is different populations of the same species. Certain animals are only present in specific places. So for example, the Javan rhinoceros is only present in Indonesia on the island of Java. So that species only actually has one population. It doesn't have multiple populations. So let's talk about exactly what is a population. So a population is a group of organisms of the same species that live in a particular space at a particular time, and then they can potentially interbreed to produce fertile offspring. So there are several key parts to this definition, right? So they have to be the same species, they have to be in the same place and at the same time, and there has to be the potential for them to interbreed and produce fertile offspring. Well, that is actually part of the definition of being the same species. So really, we can just think of it as they need to be the same species and they need to occupy the same space at the same time. Even though some animals live together, in one area you might get foxes and rabbits. Both have independent populations within that area. They are not part of the same population because they are different species. Similarly, you can get some populations that are geographically in different places, so they might be in Europe and in Australia, and that means that they are two different populations because they are not in the same space at the same time. So the two important things when we're talking about population is whether they're part of the same species and whether they are occupying the same space and time as each other. So the population sizes of species varies greatly. So we have some things that are now very near extinction. So things like the Amur leopard, and these are now only found in Russia, whereas they used to be found in other areas like China and Korea. So their population is now only around 60 animals, and that's only in this specific place. Whereas if we think about humans, we have a population that is worldwide and it's made up of many, many individuals. We can now actually, because there's so much mixing and movement between them, we can actually think of humans as a global population because we all have the ability to move within to different countries, different areas, and so that means that our whole population can now really be counted as one. And obviously, there are many, many more humans in the world than the 60 leopards that I just spoke about. Okay, so now that we've talked about what populations and species are, we can now talk about the genetics within those populations. So, the way we can describe the total number of different alleles of a gene within a population, we call this the gene pool. So, a gene pool is a collection of genes within an interbreeding population at a particular time. So, it's important to know that it's at a particular time because the gene pool will change over time. So, the gene pool within humans now is very different to what it would have been 2,000 years ago. We can think of it as all of the different alleles of all of the genes within a population. So, we've spoken about last time about different alleles. So, within humans, we have alleles for green eyes, blue eyes, brown eyes. So, that would be the gene pool of eye colour, right? So, as we know, members within the same species will have the same genes, but they might have different alleles. Which are the different alternate versions of the genes. How common these different alleles are within a gene pool is known as the allele frequency. So some alleles will be much more common. So with eye colour, blue eyes are quite rare, whereas brown eyes are very common. So the allele frequency of brown eyes would be much higher within the population of humans compared to blue eyes. This can change over time because there will be natural selection. So some alleles will become more popular or less popular. And if the allele frequency changes enough over time, then we can get different characteristics within a species that will become more prevalent. And if we take this over a very long period of time, this could actually result in a whole new species. So this is how, evolution through natural selection works. This is where new alleles are produced, and then over time these can form new species because they've got sufficient genetic difference from the parent species to be now defined as a completely different species. Okay, so two important things to remember when we're talking about genes is the phenotype and the genotype. So just to remind you on that, the phenotype is what we can see of an organism, so what it looks like, and the proteins and stuff that it has, and that is dependent on the genotype, and the genotype is all of the genetic information present in the organism. And then another thing that affects the phenotype as well as the genotype is the environment. So we've got to remember that the environment plays a massive part on how organisms look, and that is what drives evolution through natural selection. So we will be going on to that in the next few lessons. We'll be talking more about evolution. Okay, so now we're going to go on to talk about how we can calculate the frequency of phenotypes within a population. So as we said, phenotypes are characteristics that we can observe, and within a population, different organisms will often show different phenotypes. So for example, we can have flower colour, or we can have the pattern on the shell of a snail or tortoise, things like that. So there's variation. So we can calculate the phenotype frequency by counting the total number of times a particular phenotype is present in the population, and then we divide that by the total number of individuals within the population, and then normally this is given as a percentage, so we then times that by 100. So let's just go through a quick example. So let's go through an example. So if we think about a school that has 250 students in it, if we're going to look at the phenotype frequency of blue eyes, what we need to do is count the number of people displaying blue eyes. So if that is 25 students, then 25 out of the 250 total students have blue eyes. So to calculate the phenotype frequency, we would do 25 divided by 250, and then we would times that by 100, and that would give us the answer, which is 10%. So the frequency, the phenotype frequency of blue eyes within that population is 10%. Okay, so the last thing we're going to talk about today is the Hardy-Weinberg principle. So this is a principle that basically states that if certain conditions are met, then the allele frequency of a gene within a population will not change from generation to generation. We know that this does not normally happen, and this is because the conditions for this to happen must be met, and within general populations, they are not met. So we can use the Hardy-Weinberg principle to calculate the allele and genotype frequencies within a population, and we can use it to predict how these frequencies will change in future generations and see if evolution is occurring in these populations. So the assumptions that we have to make for the Hardy-Weinberg principle to be correctly applied is that the organism has to be diploid, so it has to have two copies of each chromosome. The organism has to reproduce only by sexual reproduction, so it can't have any kind of asexual reproduction capacity. There can be no overlap between generations, and what that means is that the parents do not mate with the offspring, so there's a clear definition between each generation. The mating is random, so certain members are not more prone to reproduce, and that's not being dictated by something like a breeder. And then we also must have a large population, so this only applies to large populations, where there is also no migration, mutation or selection. So there can't be anyone coming into the population or leaving, and there can't be any natural or artificial selection. And then we also need to have allele frequencies that are equal in both males and females. So as you can see from this list, this is very, very rarely, if ever, present in nature. But we can use this principle to help to build models and make predictions of populations, but it won't be perfect because often not all of these conditions will be met. So we're now going to talk about how we use the Hardy-Weinberg principle and how we use it to make calculations. So the equation that we use is p squared plus q squared plus 2pq equals 1. So now I'm going to just talk about what exactly each of these things means. So in a population, if there is just two versions, so two alleles of a gene, People can be homozygous dominant, heterozygous, or homozygous recessive. So they can have two dominant genes, one dominant and one recessive gene, or two recessive genes. So we know this from the previous lessons. So when we're talking about using the Hardy-Weinberg equation, the frequencies of different alleles is represented as a proportion of the whole population, so a number out of one. So if everyone in a population is heterozygous dominant, then the frequency will be one, but if half of the population has the homozygous recessive, then this frequency would be 0.5, because only half of the population have the homozygous recessive and half have the homozygous dominant. Then we can talk about what the different frequencies of alleles are within the population. So within the equation, P is the frequency of the dominant allele and Q is the frequency of the recessive allele. So together these will always add up to one. So P plus Q will equal one, because people either have to have the dominant allele or the recessive allele. They can't have nothing, right? So that was looking at the frequency of the alleles, but then we can also look at the frequency of a genotype. So the genotype is what combined alleles that individual has. So they can be homozygous, heterozygous, or homozygous for the recessive. So the frequency of the genotype can be represented by saying that the chance of an individual being homozygous dominant is P squared, because they would have to inherit the P from the one parent and also from the other parent, so that would be P times P, which gives you P squared. The chance of someone being heterozygous would be 2PQ, because the offspring could inherit a dominant from the mother and a recessive from the father, or the other way around, so that's P times Q and P times Q, so that's 2PQ. And then they could also be homozygous recessive, which would be Q squared, because they would need to inherit a recessive allele from both parents. So that is how we construct the equation P squared plus Q squared plus 2PQ equals 1, because that's all the possible phenotypes within a population. So all the phenotypes within the population have to add up to 1, and that's because people can either be homozygous recessive, homozygous dominant, or heterozygous. So let's go through an example, because I know that is a little bit confusing. Okay, so let's go through an example with sickle cell anemia. So sickle cell anemia is a disease where you need two copies of the recessive gene to exhibit full sickle cell anemia, and then you can obviously have the normal homozygous person with the dominant alleles, and then you can also get heterozygous people that have some sickle cell like cells, but they don't have sickle cell disease. They are called, we call this sickle cell trait. In a population, if we say 9% of an African population is born with the full sickle cell anemia, so that means they're homozygous for the recessive gene, then we can work out what percentage of the population will be heterozygous for sickle cell trait, right? So the way we can do this is we can say that 9% have the disease, so that means that they are homozygous for the recessive gene, right? So that means that the 9% is what we would say equals Q squared, right? So to find Q, we can then do the square root. So if it's 9% as a decimal, that would be 0.09. So if we take the square root of that, we get 0.3. So we know that Q is 0.3. And then as we know P equals 1 minus Q, then P must be 0.7. And to work out what proportion of the population is heterozygous, we can then use that. So we can use 2PQ, which would be 2 times 0.7 times 0.3, which would be 0.42, which would be 42% of the population would be heterozygous for sickle cell allele. So I know that's a bit confusing, but just go back over that and just make sure that you fully understand what that means. So we can use the frequency of different alleles to calculate the frequency of other ones in the population as long as the population fulfills the criteria of the Harvey-Weinberg equation. So just to make sure we fully understand this, we need to always remember that there are two different parts to this. So the Harvey-Weinberg equation is what we've just gone over, but the Harvey-Weinberg principle is different. The principle is that there is an equilibrium between the allele frequency within a population and that there's no change between generations, whereas the equation is what we can use to estimate the allele and genotype frequencies within a population. So just make sure the difference between those two things is really clear in your mind. Okay, great, so that's the end of today's lesson. Just to recap, we looked at what exactly a species is and what a population is, and then we looked at the gene pools and allele frequencies within populations and how we can calculate the frequency of a phenotype. We then talked about the Harvey-Weinberg principle and the Harvey-Weinberg equation and how we can use this to calculate phenotypes within a population as long as it fulfills the criteria that we spoke about earlier.
Thank you so much for listening. Remember, you can access additional content on our Patreon page by searching for Equity Tutors, where we have a second 30-minute lesson every week, plus monthly bonus content. You can also find us on most social media platforms. We will keep you updated on new content, and you can find us there by searching for Equity Tutors UK. Please like, share, subscribe and comment wherever you are listening. And if you're enjoying, please leave a review. Bye.
Bye.